Next case is 08-423, Akron Bar Association versus Jeffrey A. Catalazzani.
Morning, Chief Justice.
Wait, what did I call on you, please?
Morning again, and may it please the court. Advice is a lawyer's stock in trade. Those are the words of Abraham Lincoln. And they're particularly relevant to this matter today because the issue that I've raised in my objections is that whether or not clear and convincing evidence has been produced by the relator relative to the alleged disciplinary rule violations that I'm accused of having violated. Obviously, it's my contention that clear and convincing evidence was not produced. I have pointed out that the witnesses for the relator at the hearing before the Board of Commissioners stated clearly that they were looking for a free consultation. As an attorney, my only stock in trade is my advice. If I gave it away, I'd be out of business. So again, I believe the clear and convincing evidence wasn't produced. The second matter I have issue with, Your Honor, and I raised in my brief was the statements of Dr. Nigro that have really nothing to do with an examination for mental illness. Dr. Nigro has, for some reason, curiously decided that he wanted to make a comment on my personality or my lifestyle, when the only issue before him or that he was requested to rule on what was whether or not there was any mental illness that substantially affected my ability to practice law. Clearly, he found that there was not, yet he went on to state something further that I believe has caused me irreparable damage. It's clearly on the record now, and I'm going to ask that that be stricken from the record, if the court agrees with me. The third thing is the recommended sanctions. If this court believes that there is clear and convincing evidence under the circumstances, I would ask that the court weigh my 28 and a half years of practicing law with no prior disciplinary actions against what happened in this case. Again, we have polar opposites, a lawyer's stock and trade being the only way I can make a living, and witnesses who state that they only at hearing state that they were looking for free advice. They're polar opposites.
There was no fee letter in the case.
Yes, there was, Your Honor. I mailed the fee agreement to them after our two-hour meeting, and they refused to sign. So at that point in time—
Is that an exhibit in the record?
Yes, it should be in the record, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'd ask that suspension at this time in my life, after 28 years of being proud to be a lawyer, having a matter here where I'm alleged to have charged an excessive fee, even though I've only received $300.
Well, that was a settlement in the municipal court, am I right?
Yes, it was, Your Honor.
What effect should we give to the settlement in that case?
Well, Your Honor, I do primarily business law. That's also in the record. I acknowledge that I should not have filed a lawsuit in this case, and if it ever comes up again, I'm going to walk away. Nevertheless, I had a contract, and I'm 100% certain there's no doubt in my mind that a contract was entered that day. Their election not to perform was just that. I sued on the contract, $5,000. It's kind of like if I agree to paint someone's house for $5,000. It's not a divisible contract. So I sued on the contract. In retrospect, I should have put a quantum merit claim in there. And that would have made this matter a whole lot more simple. But in reality, what I did, as soon as I got the attention of the other attorney, he asked me what I wanted. I told him I want to be paid for 2 hours of my time, $300. And it was settled without even any discovery being done. And lastly, Your Honor, when the Board of Commissioners orders an individual to have a mental examination, believe me, it's very upsetting. And it seems that, at least by what I've read, there was no real burden for the relator to achieve in order to recommend that something so upsetting be brought upon a fellow attorney. There is no question that I agreed to go to this examination. I have nothing to hide. But as you can see, Dr. Nigro went beyond what I believe was his right to go beyond without a medical release. It's not germane to this case. He should have stopped right at there is no mental illness. And lastly, Your Honor, the Board of Commissioners in their letter or statement ordering me to get this examination said that I may be responsible for Dr. Nigro's fee in the event he finds mental illness. Well, it's clear in the record that he found no mental illness, yet the Board of Commissioners wants me to pay $1,200 to Dr. Nigro as part of the cost of this case. It's the relator's cost, Your Honor. They're the ones that suggested that there was no objective way that standard for them to reach. They just did it, in my belief, malicious. Given the fact that the Board of Commissioners said that you only be responsible if you're found to have a mental illness, since there was no mental illness found, the $1,200 should not be my cost. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Schrader.
Mr. Chief Justice and members of the court, and may it please the court, Attorney Dave Lowry, who is with me on this matter, is at counsel table, and also Patricia Vance of the Akron Bar is involved in this case. At his retirement dinner, Judge Marvin Shapiro of the Common Pleas Court said that he loved the law as a profession, but he didn't much like it as a business. The basic underlying disciplinary violation here is a good example of somebody treating the law as a business. These people were prospective clients. We have very little case law as to how the Supreme Court is going to handle attorney discipline regarding prospective clients. But the way the gentleman treated the prospective client was, there was no written or agreed contract for legal services. The testimony before the panel, which they found very credible from the two victims here, the individuals who were seeking to find a lawyer, was that they had not entered into any agreement. They're businessmen. What Attorney Catanzari did was file a lawsuit against them. He knew he worked 2 hours, and he sued him for $5,000. $5,000. He admits his hourly rate's $150. My math's correct. That lawsuit should have been filed for $300, not $5,000.
He says they got the benefit of his years of experience.
He does say that. The panel did not find that to be credible because essentially the benefit of his years of experience was you've got a third partner, let's get him back into the fold. I don't do any business law, and that would have been my advice. I don't have an MBA. That would have been my advice. You try to resolve cases before you file them. Any attorney worth their salt would have given that advice. If that's worth $5,000, I'm not charging enough. Now, that's the underlying problem. The reason this case is worth the sanction that was imposed has to do as much, and by the way, Mr. Catanzari has an interesting style. We had charged him with a number of things, some violations based on having a legal contract, which he claimed when he filed the lawsuit that he had a contract with those clients, and some based on the notion that he didn't. The panel found that he didn't, that they were prospective clients who were looking to seek an attorney. Our profession encourages that, by the way. We want clients to interview different attorneys, find somebody that's compatible with them.
Why isn't this case a fee dispute case?
Pardon?
Why isn't this just a fee dispute case between potential clients and a potential lawyer being retained, and a dispute about what the amount of the retainer should have been in resolving a partnership dispute.
It's not
then,
a fee.
And then a breakdown in the legal arrangement resulting in a letter going out seeking a retainer fee and a lawsuit getting filed and a $300 settle. Why isn't this just a fee dispute, and how do we get it into suspending a lawyer from the practice of law?
Because, Your Honor, you do not, in a fee dispute case, the argument is how much you're owed. Here, what happened was that, and by the way, Akron Bar has a fee dispute committee. The attorney could have sought to go there. Instead, what he does is file a lawsuit against these prospective clients for $5,000. Now, when you do that under Rule 11, you're stating that what you're alleging is true. He states, these are my clients, and they owe me $5,000. When we go to the disciplinary investigative end, once he realizes that you're supposed to have malpractice insurance, and he didn't, and he realizes that if you don't have malpractice insurance, you ought to tell your clients, then they weren't clients anymore, they were prospective clients. That's a problem. In addition, as the investigation goes on, it becomes very clear that there's more to it than fee dispute. I'm not going to repeat the language, but he used the F-bomb several times in a telephone conversation seeking to collect from those clients before, those prospective clients, before he sued them. He has somewhat of a history of attempting to intimidate and delay. In this particular case, I believe that that treatment of business clients amounted to intimidation. In addition, when we had his deposition, he threatens bar counsel with a lawsuit. In addition to that, during the pendency of the matter, he sends to bar counsel a purported copy of a letter to the disciplinary counsel of the state of Ohio, Jonathan Marshall, alleging that the bar counsel somehow engaged in ex parte communication. It was a letter with a copy to him. That's not ex parte communication in anybody's world but Attorney Catanzares, but he threatens disciplinary action. Turns out, and nobody finds this out to the hearing panel discussion, that that letter was never actually sent to Jonathan Marshall. So he attempted at least twice to intimidate those attorneys volunteering their time to investigate the matter. In addition to that, when the Bar Association and it was the first time in our history we have requested a mental examination of anyone, when it was ordered that it be done, which I believe occurred in April or May, nothing happened till the end of August. And that didn't happen until Jonathan Coughlin is disciplinary counsel, as Jonathan Marshall, who I want to speak about now, arranged to actually have that mental examination done. Now, I think that the interesting thing is that I believe that in Attorney Catanzari's world, you believe Attorney Catanzari. Essentially, his evidentiary arguments are the panel should have believed him. The panel had the chance to review the demeanor of all the witnesses and chose to believe the prospective clients who were offended at the language he used with them, who indicated they had no intention of having a contract with him, that in fact, after that interview of an hour and a half or 2 hours, they expected to go the following Monday or Tuesday and interview another attorney. They have a right to do that. And I think that our profession ought to send, through the Supreme Court, a message to the members of our profession that that's not how you treat prospective clients. Not by talking to them like that, and certainly not by suing them for $5,000, when at most they might owe you $300. And these are businessmen. $5,000, $300. They settle for $300. That's a good business decision. Lastly, as to sanction.
Before you get there,
yes, sir.
Counsel, Mr. Catanzari makes a strong point in his mind about the fact that Dr. Nigro went beyond his evaluation of his mental health. I assume that we'll find a letter in the file that from, would be from John Marshall, I guess, or from the bar. Asking Dr. Nigro to do the examination, and he does state that his paranoid personality style, which interferes greatly with his career, that's usually what we look for, is if there's a mental condition that interferes with a lawyer's ability to practice law pursuant to the rules. Does the letter indicate that to the doctor, that that's what we were seeking?
I do not know Jonathan Marshall's letter to the doctor said. I do know what the doctor's letter said, and you quoted an important part of it, but if I might, let me quote a little more. Adding all this to the psychiatric interview leads me to conclude that Mr. Catanzari has a maladaptive, paranoid personality style which interferes greatly with his career and social functioning. Let me skip a line. No, I won't. One would not be surprised at hidden alcohol abuse as an attempt to self-medicate. One wishes there were comorbid target symptoms for which psychiatric medications would be of some help, but nothing like that showed up in my interview. However, he covers himself very well. One would hope he would want to reveal himself and explore in intense psychotherapy ways to change, but that is doomed to failure unless he really wants to do it. Now, that may not be a diagnosis of psychological problems, but I sure wouldn't want to hear that about myself. And if I did, I would want to change. That brings us to the sanction issue. The underlying disciplinary violation might not rise to something that we need to suspend somebody for, but the ensuing actions do. The attempt to intimidate prospective clients, the attempt to intimidate bar counsel, the delays, the lack of cooperation, the failure to get it, the failure to understand he did anything wrong, the failure to show so much as one shred of remorse. I would suggest to you that your private prior cases indicate that in those types of situations, a period of actual suspension is important. But the reason we support what the Board of Commissioners on Grievance Sanction is it does two things we need to do in this case. The first is to discipline the attorney for these actions. And the second is it gives him a year after that on probation so that he can seek a contract with OLAP, so that he can reflect on what he did, so that he can return to the productive and proper practice of the law, hopefully as a profession more than as a business, or at least not as a business as he conducted it with these two particular prospective clients. We believe that sanction allows that. It protects the public, which is our charge in regulating our profession, and if I were talking about my three-year-old grandchild, it would be a timeout. It gives him 6 months to be away from the profession to think about what he did, why he ought not to do it again, and it gives him a monitored probationary period after that so that we can, in fact, protect the public and assure that Attorney Catanzarit can again return to the practice of law. For that reason, the Bar Association urges the court to uphold the board's sanctions. I may be early, but unless you have any other questions, I think I'm about done.
Thank you, Mr. Schrader. Mr. Catanzarit, you saved almost 9 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The interesting thing about the recommendations of the relator are they seemed, and ironically, Mr. Schrader once again reads into the record that which I find the most offensive about this whole procedure. The conjecture of Dr. Nigro that wasn't ordered by the Board of Commissioners. He realizes that quoting that and reading it to the record today and putting it out over the airwaves is damaging to me. He put it in the record over objection at the hearing before the Board of Commissioners.
You disagree that Dr. Nigro was asked in the transmittal letter to him to assess your fitness to practice, continue to practice law. Is that not in the letter?
That was
some form.
The request was to determine whether or not the person being examined suffered from a mental illness which substantially affects his ability to practice law. Now, Dr. Nigro might examine the next person and find that they're a homosexual. Is he then going to, that then homosexual, going to have to go to the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program until they convince him to be live a different lifestyle, or a vegetarian, or someone else? That's where Dr. Nigro has gone far beyond what he was asked to do, and it is an invasion of privacy. I have the right of expectation of a right of privacy regarding my personal life.
Well, but his opinion says that your personal life, if you will, interferes with the mental condition he's identified, interferes, he says, greatly with his career. And that's what we need to assess, whether in protection of clients or prospective clients, that's our role, is to determine whether a lawyer is fit to continue to practice. And that's what Dr. Nigro's letter obviously is designed to help us determine.
Your Honor, I would agree that anything affecting one's ability to practice law is germane. That's not to me what that says. If you read the report, Dr. Nigro basically writes two reports there. He writes the report he was hired to write, and that is, I have examined this guy, he's bright, articulate, and there's no mental illness. He then goes, I then reviewed the materials given to me by the Board of Commissioners. To this date, I don't even know what those are. They're all hearsay. I don't know what they are. And then from that, he concludes something else as a throw-in to justify his fee.
Counsel, what we see often before us are behavior that we normally don't find acceptable in a lawyer in a professional matter. But what we struggle with is the absolute failure of the lawyer to see that. If we were to ask you to get mental health counseling as a condition of probation and not suspension, would you take that to you have no problem and not seek it?
Well, I think Dr. Nigro, Your Honor, has answered that question that there is no mental illness.
No. He said you have some substantial personality disorders that affect your ability to practice, and we have seen evidence of them in your behavior. Are you going to be maintaining the attitude you have nothing wrong, and therefore you're not going to cooperate with any issue if we make, not to OLAP, but to seek some mental health counseling?
Well, Your Honor, if it's deemed that there's, as I said before, I went through this thing. I stand there. I have no mental health problem, and that's what Dr. Nigro said. It's clear. He states that. Board of Commissioners found that. I'm objecting to Dr. Nigro going beyond that. The Board of Commissioners finding was that there's no mental illness.
And my question, again, which you have not answered, is if we order you to seek mental health counseling, will you continue to deny you have any problem and refuse to do so?
If you ordered me to seek mental health counseling, would I continue to deny?
That you have any mental health issues and refuse to seek counseling.
If you ordered me to see a mental health counselor, Your Honor, I would do so, but I'm also going to state that it's clear to me that what the Dr. Nigro concluded in that there was no mental illness problem. And this is all very damaging, all this conjecture. And lastly, they make a point that we need to give him a cooling off period. Well, the fact of the matter is this incident took place in January of 2006. It's now June of 2008. Nothing's happened in those interim 2 years. That kind of moots their argument. Your Honor, I've got practice.
What are you doing now in terms of the practice? What's the nature of your practice?
My nature of my business, Your Honor, is I primarily do business and tax-related law. I go to very seldom am I in court.
And you do that, you have an office?
I work out of my home.
Out of your home. And how many clients might you be servicing at any particular time?
On an ongoing basis, long-term clients, Your Honor, probably 20 that I service on a long-term basis.
Okay.
And I've not actively solicited any new clients since because of this issue. It would be far too embarrassing to tell them I can't continue to do what I said I would start to do. But it's important to note that this 28 and a half years without a violation, and then something, these potential clients are on record as stating they were looking for free advice. I can't make a living giving free advice. And from that, things kind of deteriorated. But I haven't had any problems since. I never had any problems before that. And this mental illness issue is so damaging that it's even brought up, that there's no articulable standard that the relator had to overcome to get an order. I mean, they could order anybody willy-nilly, a person they don't like, and they don't particularly like me. So let's get him, and we'll refer him to this. And you can tell by Mr. Schrader right here today stating, reading into the record, that's what I've already objected to. So we can put it out on the airwaves. So, Your Honor, it's an unfortunate circumstance, but I think 28 and a half years of practicing law without any problems, and then a $300 case where someone says that I gave them 2 hours of my advice and they were looking for free advice but didn't bother to tell me about it, to suspend somebody for that is, it would seem to me to be a bit extreme. Written reprimand, Your Honor, I would accept. Again, if anybody thinks I need to be receive another psychological exam, I'll happily do it. That's not an issue. But to be labeled as having that kind of problem, I might as well retire right now. And that's how serious this is. I would ask that a written reprimand be what I receive here as a sanction if you find that there's clear and convincing evidence. But again, I'm going to point out, I don't believe there was clear and convincing evidence presented on any of the issues I was found to have violated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Contanzarit. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, please adjourn court.
All rise.